Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable Absolutely. Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Good morning and happy St. Patrick's Day. This is Jim Fink, and welcome to What's Next. We have two guests today to offer some insight into downtown Buffalo, its past, its present, its future. With us is Bob Shibley, a former dean, UB for their School of Architecture and Planning, a noted urban planner and sort of Buffalo's go-to for all things urban planning. And also with us is Jake Schneider, entrepreneur and a developer who's handled several projects in not only downtown, but other parts of Buffalo, including South Buffalo. Good morning.
Morning, Jim.
So let's talk about downtown Buffalo. It is going through its own transformation because of COVID. Office occupancy continues to increase. But even with that, all is not lost. There are opportunities here. Bob or Jake, can you talk to us a little bit about some of the opportunities that this current environment poses for downtown Buffalo? Bob, go ahead.
Well, opportunity is also a challenge, right?
Correct.
So you have fewer people actually coming in to work. You have fewer people on the street. You have vacant storefronts. You have the kinds of symptoms of what happens when the population is reduced by almost a third.
Correct.
So that vacuum gets filled. You can imagine, for example, the Class BC office tenants will find ways to move, upgrade their space and take smaller spaces. That leaves a suite of buildings ready for rehabilitation. And the opportunity is to build housing to support the population that might work there. So, and then if you lived here, you'd be home by now, which is one of the themes from 25 years ago when we started working on the Queen City Hub.
And Queen City Hub really did turn out to be an accurate blueprint for moving downtown forward until COVID came along.
It had real momentum. The city and the leadership and the business community continued to revisit the Queen City Hub and use it for things like Build Back Better or the Buffalo Building Reuse Project and things of that sort that used that as a guide moving ahead. So yes, it's had legs for quite a long time now.
And it didn't just focus on downtown because there were some spinoff effects, i.e. Larkin, South Buffalo, parts of the Elmwood Village. What happens in downtown does have a spinoff in the rest of the city and the rest of the region, correct?
I think that's huge and often misunderstood. But the tax base downtown supports the city as a whole. And if you have a reduction in tax base based on the kind of revaluation that's happening now, you're going to find ourselves with less capital to invest across the city in terms of city services.
And it's not just a Buffalo thing. This is happening to downtowns virtually across the country.
Many are hit harder than we are.
Jake, from your perspective, you've tackled some projects in downtown in South Buffalo. What's your sense on where downtown is today and where might we be going with it?
Yeah, it's a complex question. You know, I agree with Bob. I think there's opportunity in increasing our housing stock in the Central Business District. People want to be downtown. People, our tenants and our condo buyers, we ask them, you know, why this location? Why here? And because there's a lot to do here. We have a lot of things to offer. We have, you know, theater, and we have sports, and we have parks. We have a revitalized waterfront, things we didn't have before. A lot of people work in this vicinity, although there are a lot of people who come home from work to the downtown, which is interesting. So, you know, the fact that people do want to be here and live here, I think that's a plus, something we can build on. We got hit hard by COVID, you know, having vacancies causing a lack of population during the working hours. That is a something we need to recover from. And I don't know that we ever will completely. My staff, they like all the things that virtual work environment offers. Currently in our office, people come in Tuesdays, Wednesdays, sometimes on Thursdays, never on Mondays and Fridays. You shoot a cannon through our office.
And many other offices too.
And yet everything, all the work's getting done, and people are happy, and I can't complain. As a real estate investor, I'm not thrilled, but as a employer, I can't really complain about it.
But you took a building, renovated it, initially made it apartments, and then turned it condo. Didn't that tell you, wasn't it sort of proof people not only want to live downtown, they want to own downtown, they want to make it their home, their neighborhood?
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. We've done that once through to completion. We're in the process of doing that again, and we have another plan to do it in another one of our properties. It's a great way, it's a great exit strategy for us. These are all adaptively developed, adaptive reuse projects that utilize historic tax credits. So we're able to leverage those benefits and pass them on to the buyers. And they're getting really a new condo with new amenities and relative to what you might pay for a comparable product built out of the ground without those incentives, it's a really good deal. So it's a win-win for us, and it's a win-win for the buyer. The project we did convert has experienced a lot of upside appreciation, and those people that purchased are very, very happy with that just as an investment. Some have since moved on, but I don't think they regret the fact that they bought condos. Condos aren't for everybody, but we get a lot of new buyers, people who are just getting into home ownership, and we get a lot of downsizers, empty nesters. Mm-hmm. Although we get an eclectic group of people, all ages, but those are the primary demographics.
When people talk about people living downtown, their first thoughts goes to the waterfront and Waterfront Village. We get that. But I don't, Bob or Jake, maybe you can fill, don't they understand there are a lot of people living in downtown buildings, whether it's the Seneca One Tower, whether it's what Paul Kochmeyer has done, what Nick Sinatra has done, Simonelli, Palladino. You know, it isn't just people living on the waterfront. There's people living along the Main Street spine, living along Washington Street, Franklin Street. Does that surprise you? Is that something you foreshadowed, foresaw with Queen City Hub?
It was clearly an intent in the Queen City Hub. It was live, work, play, visit were the themes, and the highest priority, even 20 years ago was to create the conditions where people would be able to enjoy living downtown. And so the waterfront was kind of on the fringe of that by comparison to the kind of density that we've added to the medical campus and created an environment where more people are renting and buying to populate this. We've gone from about 600 to closer to 3,000 in the central business district and immediate adjacent areas. And if you think about that in the bigger context of greater downtown, including the medical campus and beyond, you're looking at close to 5,000 residents in downtown. If we built better connections to the immediate neighborhoods, Near East Side, Michigan Avenue, and beyond, the Lower West Side, if we created a kind of an expectation that Allentown is actually downtown, you'd have another 25,000 people actively using downtown. And so that's one of the challenges and opportunities we have in the front of this. And then take those empty buildings and fill them up with residential or other uses, and you've got still more life downtown.
Is it easier to sell downtown now than it was 30 years ago, Jake?
Depends on what you're selling.
Is it a place to live?
Yeah, I think it is, definitely. I think COVID was a little hiccup to that because people saw the momentum in the storefronts. They saw more restaurants opening up, more opportunities to meet their daily needs, a grocery store that is now closed. That was a positive everyone was looking forward to, and it didn't really come to fruition. It fizzled out, and now we're back where we were before. But yes, I think it's definitely easier today than it was when I started back in 2002.
Is the stigma, or let me change it, is the perception of downtown different today than it was, say, in the late 80s, early 90s?
Without a doubt.
Why? What's changed?
I'll tell you, first of all, back then, everyone was leaving town. All my contemporaries were on the move to the Carolinas and, warmer climes, places with more opportunity. There really wasn't a lot of opportunity here for young people. I loved it. My wife loved it. I worked with my father. That mm-hmm. helped. But we scraped along for a long time. And then Bob knows better than anybody, things slowly started to change for the better. And really was, in my opinion, the late 90s and the turn of the century when things started to click. And we had a really good run there for up until COVID. And it was continuing to improve. There was so much going on. And as a young architect, it was hard to find work back in the 80s. As a established architect, before the pandemic, I was turning work down. That was sweet. And, it's still way, way better than it was. Still way better than the 80s.
Isn't downtown pretty resilient? Think about it, going back 60 years or there plus. First in the 60s, downtown had to deal with the suburban migration. Then in the late 70s, early 80s, the construction of the Metro Rail. Then you had late 80s, early 90s, the demise of Empire of America and Gold Dome Bank. That left a lot of real estate, a lot of less workers. Then we had COVID. I mean, downtown has been challenged, and each time, albeit it's taken a while, it doesn't happen overnight. You can't flip a switch. But it has started to make its way back.
Almost all cities have a kind of life cycles and ebbs and flows, and that's the way things evolve, things change, markets change, public interest changes. The COVID taught us to work from home and showed that we could be as productive and maybe even more productive. So you've got a new set of issues to deal with. It's more important than ever to create the conditions for the density to come back. And that's a population question. It's a migration question. But it's also a kind of a how I choose to live. So, you know, in the 80s, Shays was dark. Yeah. We saved it from the wrecking ball again. And seven live and vibrant theater district kind of venues working well with other venues give us a much more vital place. If I lived here, I could walk to the theater. It goes like that. Mm-hmm. If I lived here, I could walk to my new office in the medical office building. So you've got that kind of adjacency thing. And when COVID hit and we lost the some of the commercial street frontage, we looked at 240 street frontages in just the downtown core and found a third of them vacant. Mm. That needs to be reactivated and revitalized, because when they're empty, you feel less safe. You feel less secure downtown and go to work.
So, I mean, and we know this, I mean, the recent CBRE report, downtown vacancy 16.5% on 32, almost 33 million square feet of space. That's, I look at that as an opportunity at development. I mean, conversion into residential, be it apartments or condos. There are options there that you can do with this space. I mean, it takes creativity. And going back to some of the previous reports, here's the sticking point. It's going to need some public sector help.
Yeah.
And obviously, the city's hurting, the county's hurting, the state's hurting. Who knows what's going on with the feds? But, I mean, somehow public sector dollars have to come into play, correct?
I think that's exactly right. We know that the upper end, those who could buy condos, will work. And we know that the kind of sort of lower income group that are $30,000, $40,000 a year can find the subsidy support in existing programs. Anything much less than $30,000, it's harder to take care of. And there's a middle group, that group of folks that are somewhere between 80 and 120% of the average meaning in income can't build for them in a way that the developer makes enough money. So you don't have the price in rent or sales that will offset the conversion costs of these office buildings. And that's the gap that needs to be looked at. And it needs to be thought of with a return on investment, which is the tax base, the value of the property, the way in which we draw our income tax, et cetera. Building that financial base then supports the whole city's ability to operate. So that way low income and that missing middle class is the two increments that are hard to build without and don't have existing sources of subsidy.
Jake, do you want to?
Yeah, that's really well said, Bob. I think you laid it out very nicely. Yeah, it's hard to provide a product, especially for that middle group where money is an object, but they're not getting any help. You know, adaptive reuse with the help of historic tax credits accomplished some of that. Now it's getting hard to meet that market, even with those projects, because interest rates have gone up. Property values are higher, which is good, but you buy a historic building now somewhere, and we've also run out of inventory. So there's not the type of product out there that there was to choose from when I got started. I had so many options. Now they've all been picked over. There are some for sure, but they cost a lot more because people know that, you know, you can utilize this tool.
But aren't there more properties potentially coming on the market given the high vacancy rate and some developers walking away projects?
Bob pointed out, there are no subsidies available to turn a vacant office building, if it's not a historic property, into housing. So that gap financing that comes from historic tax credits was so vital to all the progress that was made. Because you look at the housing in the Central Business District, you've got the waterfront, you've got the high-rise stuff like the Avant, like Seneca One. They're selling panoramic views and waterfront vistas, and they can demand a lot for that because that's a premium thing to offer people. You mentioned Washington Street and Swan Street and, you know, the Elm Oak Arterial. Well, you're not offering those things there, but you're offering a price point in these historic buildings that housing is there because of this program, this federal program. And New York State has a wonderful component to make it even better. But until we get something for that office building that was built in 1950 or 1960, and some of those buildings can be considered historic now.
Correct.
You can go back to the 60s and find a building, but it has to meet criteria and National Park Service that administers the tax credit program. They're not handing those out just to any old building. So to find one that is in fact historic and eligible for that credit is difficult. And the type of stuff that's being vacated, I would guess 10% of it is eligible for historic tax credit. So we really need to have something else. What else can we create? There should be an urban development incentive grant that could be, you know, I don't think it's going to happen under this administration, tell you the truth.
No.
But if you could do it, I think it would be a great boon to urban areas.
I think Jake's got that exactly right. You've got to be able to figure out how to incentivize the development of those properties you referred to. And the current incentive systems are broadly based, and in the context of all of this, it matters where you put things.
Yes.
And so you've got a historic tax credit, but it has to go where the historic property is, not necessarily where you would add strategic value to downtown development. And so finding the policy tools that allow us to redevelop these properties in strategic areas of investment, which is a key theme in the Queen City Hub. It matters where you put things. And if that's the opportunity, we really do have a great opportunity to strengthen what's already vital and add more. And you asked the question about why is downtown more interesting now than it was? And mm-hmm. some of it has to do with the cultural and amenity factors that are here already. And they're actually experiencing larger populations than before the pandemic. So they've come fully back and more, and still plans to do more than that. I think what Higgins is doing with Shays is a good example of an enrichment program that will put more bodies in the seats and more people into restaurants downtown.
Even Canalside, that took land that was sitting there barren.
Yeah.
It was an embarrassment. And now look at where it is today.
Yep.
And you know, there's shovels in the ground. It is moving forward, albeit not at the pace people thought. Again, COVID related in large respect. But that whole lower Main Street area from the Seneca One Tower to the arena, or actually even to the DLW terminal, it's much different today than it was 30 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that helps with downtown in general. You're not looking at acres and acres of empty parking lots.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to take a very quick break, and we'll come back because we have a lot more to talk about.
This is Jack Cruiser with The Scoreboard on WBFO. Listen during Morning Edition and All Things Considered each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the latest on pro matchups and college rivalries, as well as standout local athletes from Western New York and Southern Ontario. Want more? Listen to a longer version of The Scoreboard at WBFO.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And we are back. This is Jim Fink with What's Next. Our guest today talking about downtown development is Bob Shibley, UB, from UB, Department of Urban Planning, the key urban planner in Buffalo, and Jake Schneider, entrepreneur, developer. We were talking just before the break about things that help change the perception of downtown. Let's talk about some eyesores that are hurting downtown. The A&E's building, the former Adams Mark Hotel. What do we do to help find a solution for those buildings? Granted, both are privately owned. There's different set of issues with each building.
Everything we do to make downtown more vital and attractive increases the pressure on properties like that to join the chorus. So that would be my answer, is build around and create the environment that makes it more attractive and more urgent to develop those properties. They've been in distress for a long time. There's no magic bullet that's going to fix that, except as downtown becomes more vital, it becomes more profit-making to develop those properties as well.
There was some thought not too long ago of maybe with the A&E's even trying to have the city take it over through eminent domain. Mm-hmm. Change of administration on the second floor. I'm not sure where that is. Would that be a viable route for the A&E's building?
It's one of those tools that nobody likes to use and has had difficulty across the state in being employed. But it the logic of it is sound. And the amount of time these buildings have been offline or largely offline suggests they should be considered eminent domain.
Even Darrow Carter's buildings in the cobblestone.
Yep.
And even something like eminent domain might have saved the Great Northern Elevator if the city had the so desire to move forward on that. Yeah.
It's a powerful tool, but again, politically it's a difficult choice to make.
I support it 100%. I think it's unfair. You mentioned you build up around it. Well, A&E's is a perfect example of almost everything's built up around it. And you might argue the reason it's not fully built is because of the A&E's. But, that's been an ownership nightmare. Mm-hmm. It's been kicked around. I think that's a perfect example.
Nobody knows who really owns it.
Yeah, it's been a lifetime. It's been sitting there.
Yeah.
And it does have value, and it would be a great missing tooth to repair. So if there was ever a reason to utilize eminent domain in spite of its challenges, I think that would be a great one. And the cobblestone's another example. Look at what happened there. Mm-hmm. There should be an easier way to enact eminent domain. And when people are not paying their taxes and maintaining their property, that's a civic responsibility. It should trigger that. I mean, if you want to avoid that happening to your property, well then, maintain your property and pay your taxes.
You mentioned in the break the Brisbane building, and there was some talk at one point about it going residential, and now they've landed some new tenants. But there are some issues.
Yeah, let me tell you what I know about that. So Peter Hunt is a friend of mine. I've been on his radio show, and I know he's spoken about this himself. So I'm not speaking out of school here. But as an architect, I've worked for Peter at the Brisbane Building to do a number of nice projects that are eligible for historic tax credits because the Brisbane Building is, in fact, a beautiful historic building. He's up against the same battle that every commercial real estate owner in Buffalo is up against, and that's there's a lack of market for office space. So we tossed around the idea of converting the top two floors of the Brisbane Building into housing. And that would be eligible for historic tax credits. So he could create a hybrid building, which has been done around the country, and you'd still maintain some of it as office space, and people could have a live-work environment. It's a perfect example of a building that's ripe for that type of development. He is pursuing that. I don't know where he stands, but the banks are not as willing to jump on a project like that as they used to be. So there are still hurdles. But I think the point is that every historic building that is currently used in the downtown that is used as an office building is a candidate for this type of redevelopment. And the more of it that happens, the less pressure you put on the rest of the commercial real estate that is vacant. As you mentioned, 16% of 33 million, that's a lot of space.
Yes,
but,
it is.
But a good portion of that is in historic buildings that would be eligible for that incentive. So that's out there. But like I mentioned earlier offline, the owners have to have an appetite. And Peter is extremely savvy when it comes to all things real estate. And it's been a very slow conversation. He's very interested in doing it, but there, it's nothing that he's rushing to do. So I think there's some education required, and but that's another opportunity. You asked for opportunities. I think that is one for sure.
I think someday we'll look at the Brisbane Building as a poster child for this phase of downtown's development. Peter has done a marvelous job of choreographing what's in that building.
Absolutely.
So you've got an art gallery, you've got a place of convening for the public, you've got a restaurant that runs a noontime business with one restaurant and an evening time restaurant. In addition, thinking about the housing on top of that, it's exactly the mix of uses and the street frontage that brings life to downtown.
His father would be proud.
Yeah, I think he would. I think he would.
Circling back to Queen City Revisited, Patrick Kaler from Visit Buffalo Niagara is screaming they need more hotel rooms in downtown Buffalo. Has that come up in Queen City Revisited?
You bet.
Looking at some of these buildings as hospitality destinations?
I think one of the things we have to be clear about is that everything's on the table. And the hotel need, there's a real market, according to Patrick. And so thinking about the Grand and the possibility that it finds new life, and thinking about any of those 10 or 11 large empty buildings and saying, what about hotel? And hotel is not a lot more difficult to do than residential reuse properties.
But you have to get the banks to buy into this.
But Jake said it, the interest rates are at a level now where essentially any flex you had to pencil out a project gets spent on interest and you don't get it done. So we need more discrete tools that administratively help us with the capital side and the bank and financing side of building. And concurrently, we need to bring the public sector work in parallel with those private investments so that we're reinforcing and improving the likelihood of those private projects being successful.
What do we need to really spark? We're talking, we're doing a lot of talking. What do we need to get shovels in the ground?
a toolkit, a toolkit that has more levers to pull than the current one, because we're not able to finance many of the projects that we want to make work. Peter's struggling with that, and it's an expensive proposition, for example, in the Brisbane field.
And the other variable that wasn't as challenging when I started is construction costs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since the pandemic, they've escalated immensely. And it's due to labor, it's due to product. There's inflation everywhere. And there has been since the pandemic. It's not getting better.
And now we're talking tariffs too, which will add to this. And there's some high ticket construction projects going on, which is draining the workforce. The stadium, the Amazon project out in Niagara County, those two come to mind.
That's true, Jim. That made all the other projects much more difficult to find labor and pricing that is competitive.
So it is one of many roadblocks out there.
And look at the Bills Stadium, how that has exponentially gone over budget. This is the worst climate to be building right now.
Yep.
They missed that by billions. Yeah. I mean, we're not talking a small number here. And, the smartest people they could find did those estimates, and they were probably very good estimates when they were done. But no one foresaw this spike. And that really is a major detriment to private developers.
And I think that's one of the things that is giving Terry Pegula pause about what he does with the arena, because he's saying, well, you know, we thought this was going to pencil out here, and now it's up here. And what am I going to do? What are we going to do with the arena? Especially now there's tariffs and other conditions, too, that are clouding it. There's a push for more affordable housing. Governor Hochul is pushing for it. When people talk about affordable housing, it's not always Section 8. It could be someone, the college graduates fresh out of college who are earning $30,000 a year, and they need a place to live. And you talked about this earlier. How do we create apartments or condos or some sort of living quarters in downtown to fit into the affordable housing mandates?
Well, the Department of Housing and Community Renewal has a big toolkit for exactly that group of sort of workforce housing that's very low income people. So you've got a market, and you've got an ability to do that. And a lot of that's happening. So look at what's going into the Erie Canal Harbor, look at Marine Towers, look at town gardens. You're seeing large populations of that workforce level housing supported in construction. So the subsidy and tools are there for that occupancy. What we call for in the Queen City Hub revisit is a diverse population downtown, a neighborhood of neighborhoods that really reflects us as a full city, which means you need a full deck of cards. Wrong metaphor. You need a full way of understanding the real diversity of our city and then finding ways to house them downtown. As I say, we've got the upper end well covered. We don't have the middle class very well covered because of the cost of construction, because of the level of interest rates involved. And we don't have the very poorest among us covered. We have a homeless problem, and it's adding value and problem focus for downtown as an example. So finding ways to address the full dance card and everybody in it.
Does downtown have a stigma or a perception problem?
Right now it does. We surveyed 1,500 people as part of this review of the Queen City Hub and found that 9 of 10 people visiting downtown don't feel safe. And it's not because there's more crime. It's because the crime that's there is more visible because there's fewer people on the street. And it's also because of the kind of stillness of vacant storefronts. So strategically, if we could address those two things in a very short time and probably not with a lot of money, you could change the perception very quickly. When we first did Queen City Hub, the first series of priorities were security and safety downtown. And in a year, we found ourselves able to put that to rest because of the way the Mazzaiello administration managed the police force supporting downtown. And you can imagine we could do that again. And then we could also go to work and activate some of those street front properties as a very high first priority. When that's attractive, I'm more inclined to go downtown. I'm more inclined to want to go to work downtown. And so I'll make choices between whether I'm working at home or there. But if home is downtown, I'm more likely to go to work.
Jake, here.
Yeah, I think Bob's right on with that. I couldn't have said it better for sure. You know, I don't know what the answer is. I'm encouraged to hear Bob say that, you know, with a small investment, we might be able to accomplish a lot in terms of changing the perception on safety and in filling those storefronts that we've lost. There are reasons to be optimistic. I'm excited about Peter Marlett Jr.'s proposal to put a soccer stadium in. I hope that comes to fruition. We could use some improved transportation. Our city has always kind of never really found, we don't operate the way other cities do. Our public transportation is not ideal. It's there, but it's not ideal.
We also have to finish cars on Main Street.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's something we could also be optimistic about. I mean, Canal Side's a success story. Larkinville's a success story. The medical campus is.
So Seneca Street.
And Seneca Street is coming. There's work to be done there. But property values in that neighborhood have really made a huge leap forward. The streetscape is coming along. There's been a lot of development activity since we first started down there. The city's promised us a streetscape project that's going to make a big improvement. They're going to start that this summer. So there's reason to be optimistic. Our neighborhoods, I think, are doing well. They didn't have the exodus of the commercial real estate that the downtown had.
I really agree with the optimism Jake is expressing. It's a piece of geography to work on. If you think about the Cobblestone District and the Erie Canal Harbor Development Corporation's area and Seneca, and if you think about the medical campus and then you think about Larkin, it's a mile, a mile, a mile in a triangle. Mm-hmm. And you got Michigan Avenue coming to life in a much stronger way than ever before. And you see things moving east. And in the infill of that triangle with those anchors, you really have development opportunities in the future and ways to build the relationship back to downtown. And so the east side of downtown starts to really be a thriving place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because
Centennial Park's going to be a huge addition when that's finished. Yeah, yeah. Ralph Wilson Park. Yeah. We have properties right in that neighborhood, so we're excited for that.
Even putting up the bridge was a huge psychological lift.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really was. I mean,
It's our signature bridge.
Yeah. Finally,
we got one. That's funny.
And we don't have to worry about birds flying into it.
I hope not.
Sorry. That's bringing up bad memories. As we wrap up last couple minutes, if you had a magic wand, what would you do to change downtown right now to get us moving forward again?
Get safety and security fully under control. Activate those street fronts, go full speed ahead on the development of the 10 or 12, we're not talking hundreds, we're talking 10 or 12 major buildings that could be converted to residential or hotel or mixed use kind of occupancies. That those three things all by themselves would be huge. The broader picture is one of build out the toolkit that enables us to develop, create the alignment with the public investments in the public realm, and do everything you can to program and activate the life downtown. Remember Thursday at the Square? Remember some of those things that brought people to downtown venues? That's what we're looking for.
Is that a sneak preview for Queen City Revisited?
Yes, it is.
You know, in addition to those things Bob laid out there, which I agree with, and I mentioned this a little before, you know, our transportation. I don't like the fact that our downtown is bisected by an expressway. I know this is pie in the sky, but you said magic wand. So, yeah. You know, I would like to see that act as a delivery system to the downtown.
Yes.
We have a beltway. Mm-hmm. You want to get to Niagara Falls, you know, we've got the way to get there. You don't have to go through our downtown to get there. Those highways should deliver people to the downtown. I'm for taking from Louisiana Street to the Peace Bridge exit and making that a parkway, just the way people want to make the Skajakwita Parkway. I think that would be phenomenal.
Well, the template's been done in Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
They took right. that from the
exactly.
to the bridge. They made it, it's now the Niagara Parkway.
And, you know, that's just an urban lifestyle improvement. I think it would make the downtown more livable, more enjoyable. And then, you know, there's talk of extending the metro rail. I think that would be, again, magic wand. I would love to see that happen. If we could somehow connect UB North to our you know, waterfront, that would be just sensational.
Absolutely. I mean, it has to be convenient. And to get from UB North to downtown, you have to take either UB shuttle bus or whatever NFTA bus line is to the university, to the South Campus, and then take the metro rail in. That's too inconvenient. You're not going to.
Yeah.
And shouldn't we have a metro rail that goes to the airport?
We should. Cleveland does.
I mean, everyone else does.
Yep.
Cleveland does. Phoenix does.
And that would really help the downtown, because people then wouldn't really need to have a car. Today, even Buffalo, if you live here, even if you can walk to work, you still need a car. Very few of our tenants. We have some properties with off-site parking, and people will nest their cars there. But it really, people want their cars. They want to be able to get to their car every day. We're not there yet in terms of really creating a lifestyle in this community that doesn't rely on the automobile.
Well, part of the problem is we're probably too spread out. And as you said, public transportation is hit and miss. I know Leadership Buffalo, maybe about 10 years ago, they had their classmates go from their houses to the nearest supermarket via public transportation. I think the quickest anyone could do it was like 35 minutes. It really was kind of eye-opening. I remember talking to Althea about their studies, as informal as it was and unscientific as it was, but it spoke volumes that we have public transportation, but is it in the right places? And you hear office parks out in Amherst and Orchard Park saying, we need public transportation to get workers to us. You know, there's some companies that supply their own, but you do need public transportation. And if it would be seamless between downtown and the suburbs for whatever reason, that'd be a huge boost, not only for downtown, but the entire region.
And there's something about a metro rail or a trolley system that's a lot more user-friendly than buses. When I visit other cities, I'll commonly hop on a subway or a metro rail. Mm-hmm. But I would never really try to figure out the bus system.
Yeah. You can't.
Yeah.
I've been intrigued and interested and excited by the mobility planning, particularly alternative modes of transportation, downtown specifically. And there's a plan in place for that. I've also been excited, as you are, about the possibility of parkway transformation on the highway that separates us from the lake. And then if you flip that and look at the Elm Oak Corridor and you say, how much more friendly can that be for pedestrian traffic east to west? And now we really create the linkages and connections, as you say, feeding into the city. So transportation is a big, big play, but it's got lots of dimensions to it. I'm also really happy that the city has a plan to take Erie Street from Main Street to the water and really understand that as another finger in, because all of that energy in the waterfront ought to be part of our downtown experience.
We had that with Genesee Street till they cut it off with the Hyatt, the convention center.
Exactly. And all of that is actually documented in the Queen City Hub the first time around. It's one of the 100 plus recommendations that we haven't been able to move on yet. But I believe firmly that it's not pie in the sky. We can do this.
Are you optimistic about where we're headed with downtown? I know we're in a lull right now.
Yeah.
But is there reason to be optimistic?
I am. I'm bullish on it, but I think it's an occupational hazard. You don't become an architect and planner and not assume things can be better.
Yeah, but you have a track record to back it up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think there's reason to be optimistic because we did get out the other side of the pandemic and we are working on it. I think it's going to take business leadership. The city can't do it by itself. It's going to take leadership at the county and at the state level as well. And I think the banks and foundations are going to have to weigh in and give us some support to make this happen better.
Jake, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm optimistic for sure. Like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of reasons to be. If I were a young man starting my career today in Buffalo, I think there's a lot more opportunity than there was back in the 80s, late 70s when I graduated. People are not fleeing. People are arriving. And there was a point where, I don't know if it's true anymore, but we were leading the demographic of the age groups between 28 and 30-something moving into a city. In fact, that demographic in Buffalo was growing faster than anywhere else in the country, relative to our size, of course. But that was hugely encouraging. And, you know, I think 43 North is a huge program that has really been another giant success story, bringing young entrepreneurs to our city. I think there's so much upside there. And, you know, there's a lot of smart people doing a lot of creative things. And we still have a really strong creative class here in this community. Young people that are doing their own thing and thriving.
Can we keep them here?
And they want to be here because they've come to know and love this community.
Because that's one of the worst things we did was export all the UB grads, all the Buff State grads. They did their 4 years here and they went on their merry way, not necessarily in the 716 area code.
And you know, Jim, I think back then they grew up hearing what a woe is me place I live in from maybe their parents. And they couldn't wait to get out of town. I don't think people talk that way anymore. I think people talk about how great it is to live here and how the seasons are so wonderful and how you can raise a family in an environment that where people care about one another. And that's invaluable. We're also, you know, considered a climate refuge city.
Yeah.
Because we have a temperate climate, we have fresh water, we have an underutilized infrastructure. So, you know, that's a real thing. Let's not lose sight of the fact that we're better positioned to deal with these problems than a lot of places.
Our Lake Erie is not going to pick up and move to North Carolina. Where do you think we'll be in 5 years from now?
Well, there's no crystal ball, but
no.
The imagination is we're going to understand how to reuse these 10 or 12 buildings, and we're going to do that. And we're
what are some of those 10 or 12 buildings, by the way?
Well, you can count them out. You work your way around town. Look at the big empty ones. You know, some of this is sort of waiting for developer and interest rates to meet each other where they can do things. At the Copplestone District, we've got the news, Buffalo News building and the center there, mm-hmm. as one of them. We're looking at, we understand Ingram is about to occupy one of our big ones, which is the Blue Cross Blue Shield piece that moved out, is soon going to be back online in a good way. The Grand is one of those giant things.
I would say the Statler.
Yeah, Statler for sure. I mean, you just dance around downtown and look at the big empty ones and you got it.
We're all, believe it or not, we're out of time. We could go for many, many more hours, but I do appreciate Bob Shively and Jake Schneider for coming in. Thank you, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Miles to go.
Miles to go.
Thank you, Jim.
We will get there.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.